Welcome to the IYBA's podcast channel, powered by Robert Allen Law, The Yacht Lawyers. Each week, we release discussions from our past conferences, summits, and educational events specifically related to the yacht brokerage community. With more than 1,800 members and growing, the International Yacht Brokers Association, IYBA, is the world's largest and most influential association for the yacht brokerage and charter industry. IYBA is dedicated to professionalism and ethics in all aspects of yacht transactions. This week, our segment comes from Yacht Sales Summit 2021.
Lunch. Sure is nice to see Annie Avery jump here in the front row for us, Sailboat Broker of the Year, twice running and all that.
We got two Brokers of the Year right up there on the stage with you.
My good friend and a fellow Emily Dickinson fan. So Paul, I don't know where you came up with this one, but be the best that you can be, okay? It's got to be from the Army, right? That's be all you can be,
Mike McCarthy was my inspiration.
You swiped
that.
Okay, so... with the suggestion that if you join the Army, they're going to make the best out of you, they're going to take you to your zenith, and they're going to take all your talents and to the nth degree.
Get your shot.
So perhaps not to the magnitude that the Army might accomplish, but that's why we've assembled this panel of individuals here who have been to boot camp, have been to the battlefront, they've earned their battle stripes, they've earned their battle ribbons, and they've got a couple of yachting Purple Hearts along the way, I'm sure, as well. So to introduce my fellow panelists, Wes Sanford is a guy, and you'll read in your notes there, but I'll summarize it for you, dedicated to his clients in achieving their yachting aspirations with the discipline of a pedigreed business professional. How's that? Who coined that one?
My wife, she's a writer.
He's a practitioner of the arts. He worked on yachts as well for 12 years. He brags about being a very successful charter captain as well. When he shifted gears, he came ashore at Northrop & Johnson. Pleased to acknowledge his accomplishments at Northrop & Johnson. He's always talked about around town in very favorable terms. Mike McCarthy is a fellow colleague of mine who celebrated his 15th year at HMY. Is that right, Mike?
About 16 now at State.
16, yep. And winner of the coveted HMY President's Award 12 times. 12 times, not bad. And I might say the 2019 Broker of the Year for IBA for yachts 30 feet and less.
Meters.
They call me Outboard Mike.
Okay. All right. Should be mentioned as well that Mike is also a 15-year veteran of Wall Street, right? Yep. We'd like to hear a little bit about that later. And then we have Lon McCluskey, a good old friend of mine. Successful business owner at the Marine Group before selling his company, former board member of IBA. I don't know whether you were president or not, IBA, president of IBA. His one accomplishment he tried to achieve, he never got, and that was a crawfish boil for the annual party, but we never got him that. And he now enjoys a prominent position with Fraser Yachts, and these are the role models. Everybody has a role model. We've got three of them up here, especially you young folks that are trying to figure out your way into the business, and especially if in this lucrative market, you're not making it. You might want to listen to what some of the wisdom that's conveyed here from these guys. So I've broken this down into three sections, this be the best that you can be thing. And we're going to talk about business practices, best business practices. We're also going to talk about ethics, because we've been asked to talk about ethics. And then the third section is going to be Q&A. Now, I want to warn you that I like a lot of back and forth between the attendees, which is a warning, don't fall asleep, because if I ask you a question, you say, I'm sorry, I missed that, I know you're sleeping. So we may go back and forth, and if at any time you have an idea or thought, a suggestion, or you want to react to something that one of the panelists said, just raise your hand. Paul will be right there with the microphone. We'll come around and get your opinion on something. So let's start with, I think the best thing to do is to start with business practices. And so Inc. Magazine, I looked it up, and it kind of works for us really perfectly here. Discovering and utilizing the optimal ways of operating in order to reach your business potential while behaving in an ethical manner. That's kind of covers this whole thing for us. So we'll get to the ethics part, but right now I want to talk about business practices. So I want to ask each of my panelists, or some of you as a matter of fact, is how exactly, what do you define as success? And I won't begin to throw any, is it money, is it this, is it that? But Mike McCarthy, how do you, what do you define as your personal success?
You know, obviously the ability
support my family. I have two young children, and we, between private school and we live up north in the summer, and we have boats and bills like everybody else does. And being able to have them in a comfortable lifestyle and pay the bills and save for a rainy day. I mean, I left Wall Street and came into this market in the mid-2000s and had one great year, and then the next year the recession hit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to save for a rainy day. And, you know, having a nest egg, I think, is utterly important because that gives you the confidence, you know, to continue to sell boats at a high level. I mean, the thing I noticed with a lot of my coworkers in circa 2007 and 2008, when you walk by their office, you could hear fear in their voice. And ultra high net worth people smell it.
Yeah.
They smell it because they don't, if they have 200, 500, 1,000 employees, they don't have time to spend talking to individuals because they would have no time to conduct business, but they can just instinctually smell weakness and fear on somebody, and they'll just shy away from it. They want somebody who's, you know, has a reasonable degree of confidence and capability.
Yeah, shark getting a scent of that blood. And it's kind of like you define it in terms of needs, okay? And I often talk about the difference between wants and needs. You know, needs is the much stronger statement to be made. I want to lose 10 pounds. I need to lose 10 pounds. It's a stronger statement. So necessity being the mother of invention, that's where you're coming from with your success. Wes?
Wow. we're all going to define success a little bit differently.
Absolutely.
A little bit personally. And it changes over time. So for me, when I started 16 years ago, success was surviving the first year, mm-hmm. right? Getting the first deal, then getting the first deal that was big enough to sustain you into the next year. And then eventually, like normal people, you start setting the bar a little bit higher. It was, could I make a couple hundred thousand a year? Could I make even more than that? And the interesting thing is somewhere around after year 10, once you get to the point where you feel like, okay, this isn't going to be one of those things where the rug's going to get pulled out from under you, you start changing your goals towards more oriented towards the outcome for the client, right? And that's really probably the part where I think success takes on its own momentum, right? When you get to the point where you can say, the client's outcome is more important than whether or not I get that deal done,
mm-hmm.
then you'll find that it becomes self-replicating, people are attracted to that, and it becomes self-fulfilling.
I think good sales managers will often say, don't focus on the money, how much it's gonna be and all that, because you kind of psychologically begin to spend it, and if the deal doesn't happen, there's a greater disappointment. But the idea is to put a deal together to the satisfaction of the client, and that's a good that you've defined it that way. Lon?
Bob, this is year 40 for me, so.
Me too, pal.
I sold a lot of small boats in my day that have morphed into, you know, more boats. So I success is defined differently. I'm still selling boats to people I knew 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So whether it's their kids or grandkids, to that matter. So success, again, has its personal touches and its business touches. Got to the point where I owned a business and was successful with people and employees, and now I'm back to not owning a business and you know, just working hard. So I find that I'm still happy, and that's a big point. When you look at, you know, all the things you do in life, if you're happy about what you still do 40 years later, I can say that's success.
I agree with that. Now, if I were to go around the room and ask everybody, you'd all would come up with a different definition of what your success is. But I'm going to try to nail Paul Flannery back here. He's wandering around, got nothing else to do. Paul, what's your definition of success?
Aston Martin DB9.
Okay, so you're materially...
Is the executive committee listening?
Grand, Paul.
So,
seriously, much like has been echoed by the rest of the panel, success changes. And like Wes said, you know, when we first started, am I going to be able to get another deal done before my money runs out? Am I going to be able to pay my mortgage? Success is being able to pay your bills. And then what was interesting is after a few years in the business, you know, you struggle through the highs and the lows of a year. And on December 31st, what I would find myself doing was looking back and saying, that was worth it.
Yeah.
That was worth it. The effort that I put in, the trials and the tribulations, it was worth it. And you reset to zero on January 1 and start it all over again. But you develop a confidence after a while that it's going to be okay. And that's the most difficult thing about a commission sales position, is that at first you never know what's going to happen until you develop a track record and you start to develop some confidences. And like Mike said, your clients can smell confidence. Early in the game, I had a guy come up to me one day and he said, "Paul, you look desperate. You need to change that because nobody's going to buy anything."
Like Mike said.
Desperate.
Right.
Yeah, like Mike said.
That's good. So each of you, I'm going to ask you, what juices you? What motivates you to go there every day and turn your computer on and all that? What gets you revved up for the day? Wes?
Probably in its simplest form for me, it has more to do, if you enjoy what you're doing, and assuming you're successful at it, being a student of that industry, being a student of that profession is one of those things where you can kind of dive into some of the deeper stuff. You can enjoy what your clients are doing, whether they're on the buying or the selling side. You end up in a spot where the fulfillment is not necessarily just making the money, which the rewards are going to be there if you work hard enough. Mm-hmm. It's enjoying seeing going with your clients on a boat. It's seeing them take their first trip and sending you pictures of that stuff. And at some point, if that isn't enough and you're always chasing the next deal for that commission, you will burn out,
yeah.
Right?
That's great advice.
I can't stress enough that the motivation for going to work every day is important, right? If you want to do it for the long haul. There's people that are willing to chase a commission on any individual year, and that might be enough for them. But if you want to do it over the long haul, you need to find something a little bit deeper. So,
Lon?
Well, first of all, trying to get my inbox clear every morning.
Oh, delete.
Look.
Yeah. But I think that one of the biggest things is when new people come into the business. Yeah. And it's very important to have those new people come in when they're buying or selling, or more of the buyers, but introducing them through the process of buying a boat, and it's a lifestyle. It's not just buying that asset. It's a lifestyle change for them, and having them understand that, and then walking them through the process, and then hopefully you do such a good job with that they, you know, refer your friends and family members to you after the sale is complete. So that's a big key. We work so hard for the new business, and it's tough. It's the toughest to get. You should be living on repeats and referrals at 40 years of doing this. But the new business is the hardest to get, and it's an accomplishment if you do get that new business and then do it the right way.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you guys, all of you, a little bit later about how to sustain client loyalty, but those are really good points. We have the materialism, as Paul Flannery with his Aston Martin, and we have necessity, the financial necessities or needs of my family, the client satisfaction, and your personal satisfaction. So you see, everybody has this different kind of an idea about it, but you've got to define what your success is before you're going to be able to plot the track toward that and map it out for yourself. So what happens from the moment that you get a listing on a yacht? What do you do from that very moment, and what process do you go through to make sure that it is being handled properly? Wes?
Every deal's a little bit different. I tend to dive into the people that are involved in the deal. So if it's on the listing side and you're trying to get a handle on the boat, it's actually spending time on the boat, spending time with the crew, spending time with the seller, right? The understanding the dynamics of not only the hardware, but the people involved are kind of what I use to set up the building blocks to get to the end, to where you end up with a successful deal, rather than just spinning your wheels constantly on a daily basis. Just if your thought process is wait for the phone to ring, answer the phone, answer the questions, you're missing more than 90% of the process.
Take that to heart. Yep.
You need to be prepared and thinking ahead of what are the possible things that could happen along the way. And that's true whether you're representing a buyer or whether you're representing a seller. So I would say a lot of advanced preparation even before the phone starts ringing, and then thinking of ways that you can kind of either get around or solve problems well in advance of it is going to serve you well. So it's a lot of advanced prep.
Mike, you just got the listing. It's a 200-foot rust bucket. What do you do? What are you going to do with it?
I'd hand that off.
That's the name of the.
No, so I mean, if they're if the owner says, yeah, 1,000-hour service has been conducted, or we had an image scan, or you know, any scopes of work, they'll detail out, and you ultimately write up on your listing, get evidence of it. I mean, physically get the printout from the 1,000-hour service from the MTU or man mechanic or whomever it is. And catalog it all. And you know, a lot of times I have some excellent captains running some bigger boats, but all their paperwork is just thrown in a box somewhere in a wheelhouse. Just, you know, I know it sounds crazy, but I put it in binders sometimes because A, I get to see what's physically there. And then B, when a prospective buyer or another broker comes through, they can whip through it and with some confidence know that you're selling them, you know, you're not selling a bill of goods, you're selling them it's legitimately been done.
So this education, self-education process to have the answers.
Yeah, it takes a lot of guesswork out of it because, you know, if you're dealing with $4, $5, $10, $20, $30 million boats, a broker, how many shots do you get with that buyer? If you bring him the survey and he spends $20, $30 grand on a survey and it's just not what you proposed it to be, you're probably not going to get that guy back.
You lose credibility, yeah.
It's going to go away. So you try to make it good on all ends. Mm-hmm. And you're serving your client well by doing that as well. You know, you're just mm-hmm. presenting the boat in a proper way.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Lon?
I think you need to be the author of the boat when you represent it. So you need to know that boat as well. You need to know its history, when it was born, if you will, and how many owners it's had. Because you're going to get bombarded with those questions. And I also think that in the sales process, you know, we've adjusted our commission agreements between houses to, in a lot of cases, be 50-50, 60-40. So you need to work with that agent that's calling you if you're in a 50. He's your equal partner, so to speak, in trying to bring home a commission. So the more information you can share with him about that boat he's calling on, the better. And he can share your same commentary. So that getting the listing and being able to be forthright about that information is important. And it happens quickly. You may get a phone call today, the phone's ringing, and the information's got to come that fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you've heard me say this before. I love to tell the story what Andrew Silla said the old way. There are three things and three things only. I know you've heard us before. I'm going to say it anyway. There are three things and three things only you say to a client. One is yes. Second is I don't know, but I'll find out. And the third is isn't she beautiful? So he said that always worked for him. I think things have changed since then, but he's...
That's why he's in Newport and we're here.
That's why he's retired on his own boat. So anybody have any questions so far, any clarifications, any thoughts, ideas? Just raise your hand and shout it out and Paul gets you the mic. Marketing has changed dramatically for us over the past few years, and it continues to pick up momentum and changing in the digital space that we live in. With new millennial buyers who have a different attitude about luxury goods, social networking and such. How is it that, can you tell me how it is that you personally are able to separate yourself from the pack by marketing yourself? What do you go through? What do you involve yourself in order to be able to say, here's who I am and here's the rest of everybody else? Maintain prominence.
Right. In my particular case, I've always accentuated photography and video for listings, yep. If that's what we're going to talk about. I'm involved with a company that feels that that's a high priority as well. It wasn't that long ago that I think brokers in general used to go through boats with, you know, some kind of a little digital camera and take pictures and upload it. And maybe even there's some people here that used to fax those to people. But today, as fast as everything's changing, if you are not doing high-resolution video of your listings, you will be at the bottom of the pile, right? It's not even about photography anymore. I mean, photography is still important, but that part of the business has changed so fast. That's one thing that if you work by yourself as an independent broker, or you're working with an organization, if you're not talking about that and accentuating that, you're going to be behind, because that's how everybody's learning about boats these days.
Just remember when print brochures were the chief marketing tool, the chief selling tool. Where are they now? You know. So, Lon, same question.
You know, the social media part kind of takes care of itself within our group, so we're constantly trying to improve that. I go back to the old school. I like to talk on the phone. So if I can grab somebody, you lose some personality with text, with, and you lose the context. But when you do talk to somebody on the phone, you can, they can either hear your enthusiasm or you can hear theirs.
Yeah.
And I think that's a connection you can make. So that's one of the things I like to do.
Texting can be a little dangerous. You may be saying something that you don't want to say.
Or you slip.
Or you had a couple of cocktails and all of you hit the send and you go, oh my God. Mike?
Well, I mean, with me personally, I do a lot of work within the Princess product group. And you know, like Facebook and Instagram were helpful for me because, you know, as I sell them, I post them out. So as time went on, people would ask me to call, find out what other princesses I had coming to market, and more importantly, comp boats. Mm-hmm. So I knew about boats that are upstream before anybody else knew them because I was helping comping them. So it was just kind of a self-feeding animal, and it worked out real well.
That's great. Yeah, how many of you use LinkedIn as a social media device? Oh, not that many, half the room. You might be interested to know that LinkedIn is the number one employment agency in the world now. And if you're not on LinkedIn and networking within, you can't believe the number of inquiries that I get on LinkedIn for consulting services. It's quite the tool, and you should visit that. I want to talk to you about your customers. And you talked about keeping customers for a long time and all that. What is it you do to be able to maintain the loyalty of your clients? How is it you're able to keep them within when there's so many others that want them?
Provide the full service.
Yeah.
And from A to Z. And I think that one call does it all.
I think that's a good point about picking up the phone and calling instead of depending on emails
and
text. Yeah.
It's hard to do because of everything else that's going on, but I've never been good about a tickler file, but if you had a tickler file, when you sell that boat, you make sure 3 months,